This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3413 for Wednesday, the 1st of September 2021. Today's show is entitled Bash Snippet Using Coprock with Sklite and is part of the series Bash Scripting. It is the 130th show of Dave Morris and is about 46 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is sending multiple queries to a running instance of Sklite 3.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello everybody, this is Dave Morris. Welcome to Hacker Public Radio. Now today I'm talking about a Bash thing, and I've called the show, it's one of the group shows I call Bash Snippets. I'm talking about coproc, the command coproc, C-O-P-R-O-C, and using it with the SQLite database thing. I'll tell you where I'm coming from. I'm in the process of rewriting some scripts that I use to manage my collection of Magnatune albums. Now, I'm a lifetime Magnatune member, and I've talked about this before, and so I have access to the whole Magnatune music collection, which is a range of music of various sorts, but under Magnatune as a sort of record label. I wrote a script for downloading albums and putting them into my music directory way back. I talked about it in 2013 show 1204. Now, the original scripts are available on GitLab still, and in the lifetime I've known of one other person to make use of them. So I've been using them myself for quite a bit, but since 2013 I've written a few other support scripts. For example, I wanted to be able to manage a queue of albums that I wanted to buy and download, and another one which summarizes the state of this queue. And it's this show queue script I'm currently updating. I've included it in the resources for the show, calling it show_queue_orig, or IG. The original version of this script took Magnatune album URLs from a file, and this was my attempt at a queue. I've got some things which take the top album off the queue and then edit it with sed to just drop that off and actually store that away somewhere or other as things that I've bought. And in order to do this, to do the purchasing, I needed to parse out, well, I can just use the URL as it stands, but in order to give me some sort of report, I need to parse out the last element of the URL, which I fed through grep to get some pre-prepared summary information out of another file. And the GitLab repository shows this, so I won't go into details here. But basically, it's an XML database that Magnatune used to produce. And when I receive it, I scan it and turn it into a file of album summaries. We'll see this in a bit later on. It's not making any sense. Anyway, Magnatune's moved away from this XML file. XML's a difficult thing to manage. I know Clatter's recently done a show on XML, and XML are great, but people tend to use it as a sort of data store, as a database almost. So people have used XML and found that it's incredibly easy to break the database because XML is so fussy about the contents. So you can't put less thans and greater thans in the actual text. You can't put ampersands in. You have to jump through hoops. A bit like HTML You have to jump through hoops in order to allow these through. Anyway, MagnaTune moved from this XML file to an SQLite database a few years ago now. I want to move my stuff to that. They're still running the XML, but it's not really supported. So if anything goes wrong with it, then I'm on my own. So I want to move to their SQLite stuff. And so for each URL that I find, I want to look it up in the database to find out its details. So the first version of this new script wasn't very difficult to write. All I had to do was to extract the search data from the URL. So I'm reading the URLs one at a time out of a file and parsing out the bit that's interesting, and then using that to do a query on the database. And just do that in a loop. And I've included my first attempt at this as a file called show_q_db_1. And it's one of the resources for this episode, so you can have a look at it if you want to. I felt bad about writing it this way because the loop's not going to iterate much. At the moment, it's got 26 things in the queue because I've not downloaded anything for a while. So it's a moderately expensive process for the loop to be calling SQLite every time around with a query with variable bits in it. So I wasn't happy about doing it that way and wanted to look for a better way. So in April of 2019, Clacke did a show, which is number 2793, and he talked about the bash coproc command. So to summarise pretty much what he said, this command creates a subshell running a command or group of commands, which is connected to the calling, or I tend to call it parent process. I think it's not an invalid way of expressing it. The calling process through two file descriptors, which I tend to call FDs in the notes here. It's possible for the calling shell to write to the input descriptor and read from the output one, and that's the way that you communicate with whatever is running in the subshell. I was vaguely aware of coproc at the time of Clacke's show, but I hadn't looked into it. I found the show fascinating, but I didn't have a use for the feature at the time, so it sort of went to the back of my mind, really. So to solve my need to show my MagnaTune queue of future purchases, it looked as if an SQLite instance running in the subshell could be given queries one after another and return the answers that I needed. So this was the start of my journey to a bash script using coproc. So let's go into some details. So the pending queue, it just contains URLs, and I've given an example of one. It ends in a string of text. This element is the so-called SKU, which is, I'd never come across this term until I saw MagnaTune using it, but it's used all over the place. It stands for stock keeping unit, so it's just a sort of index, a unique ID for a thing you have in your stock collection in a warehouse or whatever. And that's the key to the album in the database, or one of the keys anyway. In the original XML-based system, when I run it, I see the following example information when I run the current script, and the following stuff is a list of the artist, the album, the genres, and the code being the SKU. So I get that for each item. I'm only showing one here, obviously. So the original show queue script just reads this queue file, and then it looks up the SKU in a file of reformatted XML information, as I've already said. And I've also said that there's a copy of this script available if you want to have a look at it. I haven't included any of the files with it, but just to get the general principle of what's going on. So talk a bit more about coproc. Clacke's show, 2793, he talked about this command and how it behaves. I looked at the bash reference manual, and there's a link at the end of the notes, which documents it in a pretty terse way, I find. It's one of these things where I need to read it several times before I start to get any idea of what it's talking about. There's a lot more information in there than a quick scan through will reveal, I find. So coproc runs command as a subshell which is generally called a cold process. That's a generic term. You see it quite a lot in the documentation. And it's got this two-way pipe connected to it. So you can talk to the code process. And the syntax, which I think is a bit strange, is the command coproc, C-O-P-R-O-C, followed by an optional name, followed by a command, and then some redirections. Optional. The use of the name depends on the type of command. If it's a simple command, then no name can be provided, which I found confusing, and I kept trying to give single commands a name. In that circumstance, you get the default. The name is allocated by the coproc command itself, and it's just coproc in capitals. But of course, if that's the case, you can only run one coprocess at a time in your shell. The alternative to a simple command is a command group. I was going to say complex. A command group enclosed in braces or parentheses. We've seen this in the various bash things that we've done. I don't think I've actually concentrated much on what a compound command is, but I've used them. So you probably, if you've been following that, you should understand what I'm talking about. Now, the users, if you supply a name under those circumstances with a compound command, then you can provide a name or not. If you provide it, then it's used, obviously. Otherwise, coproc in capitals is used. So what's the name for? Well, it's used to create variables relating to the coprocess. So the calling shell needs to have things to get in touch with the coprocess. And what it does, well, first of all, there is a variable created called, made from the name, and then underscore PID in capitals. That holds the process ID number of the subshell of the coprocess. And it also creates an array called the same as the name that you provide. The relevance of the array is that it contains the file descriptors for input and output. And element 0 of your array contains the standard output from the coprocess. And element 1 has got the file descriptor for standard input. Now, I note here in the show notes that I haven't really talked about file descriptors in the bash scripting shows that I've done, but I plan to do so before long. Talk about redirection as well. That's really one of the next things on the to-do list. And yes, okay, COVID stopped me doing all these things. I think it messed up a lot of people. But my plan is to get back into doing some of these things because I find them quite fascinating. So don't mind digging around to learn more about them. And it also benefits me because I end up knowing more as a consequence. So here's an example of some simple usage. And I've given an example coproc call where the command is the bash date command. There's not much point in doing this, they say in the notes, but just to get an idea of how it works. So you would type at the command line coproc space date semicolon. Now, don't hit return yet because you want to see what comes back. And the way that you do that is, well, the way that I'm doing it in this example, there are other ways, is to use the cat command and then tell cat to get its data from, and here's a redirection expression which gets it from the element 0 of the array that I was mentioning. So you need to type less than, which is a redirect saying get the data from here to cat, an ampersand, then in quotes, double quotes, dollar, open brace, coproc in capitals, open square bracket, 0, close square bracket, close brace, close double quotes. So what's that doing? It's the dollar and then in braces name with an index. You will remember that from when we talked at length about arrays. That's getting the contents of the array coproc, which is the default, because we're using that form of the command, and it's the zeroth element. And we're using that in a redirect. It's actually just a number, I don't know how these are allocated, but it's usually 60 or something like that. Depends what else is grabbing file descriptor numbers on your system. So you get back from that a line which begins with square brackets and a number. In my case, it was 1, a space, and then a number, 40206 in my case. That's the process ID number of the process that's now been created for running the thing that you're running. The next thing you get back is the date, the time that the coprocessor ran, which is 29th of July in this case. And that's the result of what CAT did using that file descriptor. And then you get another square bracketed 1 with a plus after it, and it's followed by the words done, and then coproc, capital coproc, date. So that's saying that the process that you started is closed, has been terminated. And the reason that coproc date and the CAT were both on the same line is because the coprocess created by coproc will fire up quickly, do its stuff, and then stop. Of course, there's nothing to keep it going. So if you hit return at that point and then type the CAT expression, you'd be very lucky if you got the output, because the process would have gone. Doing it on the same line means that it's processed very, very quickly by the bash parser, so you get the answer back. I mean, there's much easier ways of finding out what the date is, but it does give you some sort of idea of what this coproc thing can do. I've added a note to say, if, not in this particular case, but if you were playing around with this and you found that your coprocess doesn't stop, well, it actually uses the jobs feature of bash, which you haven't covered in the shows I've done. You can type the jobs command, which shows any jobs that happen to be running using this mechanism. It's usually things that have been put into the background by various commands. And if you did that in this particular case, if you could do that immediately after you'd fired off the coproc, then you would get back that there was a job number 1 running. And that's why you get the 1 in square brackets. If you ever did end up with a hanging coprocess, you can issue the command kill space, K-I-L-L, space, and then %1. That means kill job number 1. It uses these numbers as a simple means of accessing stuff. You can also kill the process number, the PID, process ID, directly. That's just in case you ever do this and wonder what on earth's going on. If you're bothered by the fact that coproc generates this square brackets number, etc., etc., then you can suppress it if you're doing it on the command line. There are options that will do it. I'm not going to talk about them. But when you run this stuff in a script, bash suppresses it anyway. So mostly I don't care, to be honest. So let's look at the gory details, as I put it. I spent a couple of weeks messing with this, actually, to try and learn the intricacies of coproc, because I don't find it well documented and I don't fully understand everything that's going on. Still haven't quite got to the bottom of it, but I've got a lot further. So using coproc for single line stuff is pretty straightforward, but there seems to be very little point in doing it, to be honest, to me anyway. If you've got a coprocess that you want to receive and send multiple lines of data, then things get quite a bit more complicated. So I've listed 3 points that you need to be aware of. So it's your coprocessor. You set this up. So you should have a good idea about whether it needs input. Date didn't need any input, for example, and all it produced was output. You assume it's receiving what you send by how it responds. There's no easy way of telling whether anything you send to it gets there. But there's a whole issue about buffering. You'll find that some bits of software will hold on to the data that you sent them without actually processing it, maybe, because they're doing something else, perhaps, or they might not be sending back stuff straight away. So the buffering is an issue. Second point, when you finish sending stuff to the coprocess and you want to tell it it's all done, you must close the input file descriptor. And you do this with this rather arcane command, which consists of the bash command exec, don't know if we've ever covered that. I think we might have done. I've actually used it in things, in functions I've talked about. Anyway, exec is then followed by, in braces, the name of the array that you have created, whatever that is. I've just used name as a generic marker here. Square brackets one. So you're talking about the array element one, which is the input file descriptor. And you follow that with a greater than sign, an ampersand, and a hyphen. See what I mean about arcane? Now, this is one of the file descriptor / redirection things that Bash offers. And these, I've deliberately left them till later on in the series of things that I've done for Bash, about Bash. I've made reference to the Bash manual. The section duplicating file descriptors gives some information about what this does. It doesn't really explain how you use the operator mentioned there with a file descriptor held in an array, and it certainly doesn't show this odd form we're using here and explain it. But I'll cover this later on in the Bash Tips series when I've got my head around it and understood it fully. The other thing is you can't really tell how much output to read from the code process. And you might be dealing with something that performs I/O buffering, so it will hold on to its output unexpectedly. And this can cause a deadlock if you get it wrong. And a deadlock is where the parent and child processes are both waiting for the other process to do something. So it's really easy to get into a situation where you, for example, run cat against your coprop, saying effectively, give me what you've got, and there's nothing. So what do? You've typed that at the command line or in your script, and nothing's coming back. You don't then have a means of saying, unless you go to another terminal, of saying, well, just stop then. So it's messy, shall we say. So I've been playing with this, and I wrote a coproc example script, which is included with the resources here, called coproc_test.sh. And what it's going to do is to run Bash as a coprocess, and it's going to just feed it Bash commands. So my researchers came up with various things. First one, I declare a variable, set a variable called process, which is set to the string stdbuf, B-U-F, space, hyphen I0, hyphen O0, hyphen E0. Then a space, then Bash. What this does is it will run Bash, but with no buffering. It tells Bash not to do buffering at all. And I found that this was the only way I could get this particular example to work. Then in the script, I declare an indexed array called com, whose contents are a series of commands. So there's a date command, who am I, ID, an echo, a printf, and so forth. Next is to set a variable n to the number of elements in the array, just so I could add more and whatever without having to change a number. It's probably good practice anyway. So the next thing is I start the code process. The command coproc space child, I called it child, and then in braces dollar process semicolon. That's one of the things about braces, if you recall. You can put each of the braces on separate lines with all of the lines in the commands in between them on separate lines. But if you don't, you have to use semicolons, and you have to have a semicolon before the last brace. That's ingrained into my head now, but there was a time when it used to really mess me up every time. So we then set a variable I to 0, because we're going to be counting, and we go into a while loop. The while loop has got a test looking to see whether I, the variable I, is less than variable n. So we're counting, we're going to count through the elements of an array, and n is our last point. In fact, n minus 1 is the last point. So the first thing that happens in the loop is the command that we're going to get from the com array is displayed with a dollar on the front just to make it easier to see. which ones are the commands. Then we send it to the coprocess. And we do that by echoing it. So it's echo, double quotes, dollar, open brace, COM, open square bracket, dollar I, close square bracket, close brace, close double quotes. That gets you that, the ith element of the array. Now we're redirecting that into the file descriptor, and that's achieved by typing, and we saw that this before, but it's not quite the same, greater than ampersand, then we have an open double quotes, dollar, open brace, child, open square brackets, one, close square bracket, close brace, close double quotes. So that child one is the array element containing the input file descriptor. So we're redirecting output to that particular file descriptor. And so we're sending a command to the code process. Then, not using cat this time, because cat will just keep reading until it gets end of file, until it's run off the end of the data. What I'm using here is read, the read command, which will get just one line from whatever resource you're pointing at, whether it be a file or whatever. So the command is read space hyphen u. This introduces the file descriptor that you're going to read from. By default, you just read from standard in or whatever. And I won't read this out in detail, but in double quotes, we've got the specification of the child array element 0. Then we have hyphen r after a space. I do this by default because I'm told that it's good practice to do it. Though I don't actually know the complete reason why. Follow the r with the space and the name of the variable to receive the line. And I've called that results. And then echo that to the standard out dollar results. Then increment the variable I so that the loop can continue. So this will chug around, sending a command to the code process, receiving the output. Now, I added the next bit just as an experiment to see how this would work. You'll have noticed, I think, that the last command in that list of commands in the array is a printf, and it's printing the string hello world, but there's a new line after the hello and another one after world. So it's going to generate two lines. And what we'll have seen now for monitoring this script is that it has written the first line of that from that printf, but it hasn't done the second one because it was just the one read. The loop is now finished. So this bit of code says if, and then in double square brackets, hyphen v, which is a thing that checks whether a variable exists, is it? Yeah, I think whether it's actually declared. So if child underscore capital PID exists, let's say, then that means that the process hasn't died because we haven't told it to stop, so it's still running. One of the commands could have been exit, so we might have just terminated it that way. So if the process is still running, then we echo two hyphens and the word end and two hyphens just to demarcate the point in the script. Then we execute the thing that the command that closes the input stream, and that is exec, open curly bracket, open brace, I should say, child, open square bracket, one, close square brackets, close brace, greater than ampersand hyphen. And that's that arcane thing I talked about before, which says close this channel, close this file descriptor. And then before leaving, we run cat against the input file descriptor from the process. So that is cat, then a less than sign, an ampersand, then in quotes, the specification of child array element 0 to get that file descriptor. So when you run that, you see the output of each of the commands, the date, Who Am I, ID, Echo Bash version 5.1.4, blah, blah, blah. Then the printf Hello World produces Hello. Then that if statement with the end in it triggers the end. And then the cat at the end gets the word world that's still in the pipe waiting to be read. So the loop just reads one line from the coprocessor. So that's what I was talking about earlier on, is that you don't necessarily know how many lines you're going to get back from each iteration of the coprocess. Each time you send it something, you don't know how much you're going to get back. And there's no easy way of detecting where that is, what the end is. Because if you were to send a sort of end of file thing, that would cause the file descriptor to be closed, which means you can't then talk to it anymore. I think I'm right in saying that. So ask a question in the summary of points here. What would happen if a command was sent which produced no output? So if you added, in quotes, a colon to the list of commands, a colon is just a null command in Bash, then the script would hang waiting for output that will never come. So the code process would get the colon, and that means do nothing. So it will return no data whatsoever. Then the read would be triggered, and it will hang there waiting for something to come back from the process. So the whole thing is frozen. We're in a sort of a deadlock. Now, my experiments showed that if I modified, and I haven't actually demonstrated this in an example here, if I modified the read to include a timeout, say 5 seconds or something, then the read would fail at that point and would then loop would carry on with the next command. So that's one way of doing it, but it's really clunky, not very nice. Hopefully you'll have noticed that the output didn't include any of the job control stuff that we saw before, so there's no square bracketed ones and things from it. So to my way of thinking, well, this is a pretty useless example in the sense of doing anything of any consequence, but it does hopefully give some sort of indication of the way that code processes behave and how you talk to them and stuff. Now, having read the stuff about code processes in Orc back in the day when we were doing a series on Orc and deciding not to get into that one in the series, I nevertheless thought I'd have a go at putting together something using code processes in GNU Orc. It only works in GNU Orc. Plain Orc doesn't have this feature. And so I've included an example. I won't talk about it, but it's doing the same thing of being given an array of commands and running Bash and feeding it the commands and then reporting what comes back. It's a little bit nicer in some respects, to my mind anyway. But I've included the script as part of the show resources, so have a look and see what you think. So all of this led me to a solution to my show queue script, sort of solution anyway. It was an interesting voyage. I certainly understand coprog a bit better. I don't think I'm going to use it, but I did get a show out of it. So I did produce a final script, which works, does actually work and does do what I want it to do, but I'm not sure I want to do it this way in the future. It's included as part of the show as the resource there, and it's called show_q_db_2. That's another one using the database, but a different way. Now, I won't go into a vast amount of detail here, but it's listed in the notes, so you can have a look at it. I tend to be, I build my scripts based around sort of template, so it tends to have a fair amount of standard preamble. So there's a bunch of variables being defined for where files are, the directories, where they live, and where the files are. So I create something that points to the pending file, which is the queue, and another one that points to the latest copy of the MagnaTune database, which is sqlite_normalized.db. And there's some sanity checks. Not enough, actually. I would also check that the database existed. I check the queues there. But anyway, then there's a check to see whether there's anything in the queue. And there's no point in doing this, going any further if the file's empty. There's a regular expression declared, which contains the preamble of the MagnaTune URLs, and the final bit is the SKU, the stock control thing, what it stands for now. Anyway, that we'll come to that in a minute. Then I create a variable called SQL template. I create it by using cat against a here document. I'll cover here documents when I get to redirection, because it's regarded as a piece of redirection. It's just a way of getting data from the script itself and plugging it into a file or a variable or whatever. So what I'm including here is a piece of structured query language, SQL, which is performing a select on the database. And because the way the database is designed, it's got a table for artists, it's got a table for albums, it's got another one for genres, another one for subgenres, and it's also got, in each album, it's got this code, the SKU. So in order to get what I want, I need to join these tables and do some jiggery-pokery to get what I want. This is not a database show, so I won't go into that much detail. But the final bit of it, or the penultimate bit of it, is the line having SKU equals and then open quote percent %s close quote. That is because this whole string is a template for use in a printf command, and I want to substitute a value into that percent %s when I generate a version of it. There's a semicolon at the end of that line because that's the end of that piece of SQL. Then the next line, dot print, is just a command to the SQL, SQLite 3 program. It's got a sort of meta language which does all sorts of database related things, but you can also get it to print stuff. So I'm just getting it to print a line of hyphens, which you'll see in a minute when you see this being run. So the code proc is fired off next, and I called it dbproc. I used this stdbuf thing that I mentioned earlier on. So it's switched buffering off in the code process, and SQLite doesn't do buffering. Then SQLite 3 gets the option hyphen line, which tells it to print its the stuff out, not in a table form, but line by line, single line per value. And then $db is the path to the database itself. So the main loop, we use a variable called n, which we set to 0, and we're reading, it's a while loop, and each iteration we're reading a variable called URL from somewhere, semicolon do, while read hyphen r space URL semicolon space do. If you look at the end of that loop, it's got a done, and after done is a less than, it's redirection followed by, in quotes, the name Q, $Q. And what that does is makes the while loop read the contents of the file, and each read command that you issue in the way that I've done gets the next line from there. We've seen this before in other contexts. So we increment this variable n, and there's a test which compares the URL that's returned with that regular expression from earlier on. So if they match, it is a proper URL, then we should get back a variable called bash rematch 1, which contains that last element, which was in parentheses in the regular expression. We put that in a variable called SKU. If it doesn't match, then there's a problem with that URL. It's got mangled somehow, so we output an error message showing which line it's on. That's what n is for. And showing the URL that's failing. Then the last line, really, of the loop is a printf using that SQL template, a new line on the end of it. And we substitute in the value of SKU. So that goes in as the percent %s we saw earlier. And then we pipe that to the process using the input file descriptor. And I won't read that whole thing out there because we've done that already. So the loop would just carry on sending multiple queries to the SQLite process running as a coprocess. So in this particular case, once the loop is done, we close off the input stream, which tells SQLite it's all finished. So SQLite will actually then send, it probably has already been sending data as it's going. I could have written it to pick that up, but I thought I'd just go with what I already had. And because I'd learned that I could do that as I was proceeding with this. So this thing closes the pipe, but the coprocess output pipe will either contain all the output from SQLite, or SQLite will currently be waiting to flush what it has to something that's going to read it. So we run cat to do that, and we get back all of the lines that SQLite produced. So I've included the first two chunks, first 12 lines of what comes back. It's slightly different from the original one because I'm getting the database to format the words artist and the contents of artist. So it's using SQLite's line mode, which has to put out the title followed by an equals followed by the contents. But yeah, I can live with that. And there are two lines for the genre stuff. There's a sort of primary genre per album and then some supplementary genres. So the first one is alt-rock, and it's also folk and instrumental new age, according to this. The XML version of the database didn't go to that depth of detail. I've obviously made the database a bit more detailed, which is good. So that's it. I just wanted to sort of tie the loose ends together with a conclusion. From my point of view, it's been an interesting voyage. It's taken me a while to get there. And it's been giving me slight headaches along the way. I still don't understand the syntax of that exec and then a array element in braces with no dollar on the front. I can't understand exactly what that is. I didn't know that was even legal, but it apparently is. I'd like to know where it's documented. I'm hoping to find that along after this show goes out, which I'll tell you. Reading around lots of other people's experiences with coproc, one of the conclusions drawn is that named pipes are better. There is a facility in Bash where you can create a thing called a named pipe, which is a device which lets you write stuff and read stuff from different processes and talk to something that's listening. So you can have process A sends to process B by writing through a named pipe, and then B writes back to A through the same named pipe. It's a bidirectional thing. Hopefully I'll be able to explain that better when I delve into it a bit deeper, in which case I'll be talking about that in the Bash Tips series. A number of people said, don't even do this, use something like Expect. Expect is a program that's been around since the early 90s, I believe, and it lets you run a sub-process of a thing. Usually it's a sort of, like a coproc would be, it's something which runs, it's a command line thing that you can talk to by typing at it from the command line, but it lets you run it as a sub-process and write a program around it which runs it as if you were running it. Now, I spent several years using Expect and ExpectTK in my job because we had a series of machines running Ultrix and a thing called DeckAthena on top of that, where all of the service level stuff did not have an API. It just had command line stuff. So if you had, you know, like 500 students that you wanted to give accounts on this system, then you'd have to sit down for hours and hours and hours on end and type the stuff in, because the commands did not have a means of receiving data in a meaningful way. So I learned ExpectTK more. The TK bit is it runs the TCL/TK front end on top of Expect. Expect is written in TCL. It offers a TCL interface. So That was great. I was able to automate a lot of stuff using that. I've not used it for 10, 20 years. I don't know. But anyway, expect is a great answer to this type of problem. And if you go and look up the Wikipedia page that I've referred to here, then you can see that expect itself is quite clever, but there's quite a lot of derivatives of it, versions written in various languages. And there's also one which runs as a bash command, which is quite nice to work with. I'm just in the process of playing with it, and I'm quite enjoying it. The other point that was made was have a look at the Stack Exchange reference I've added here, which where somebody breaks down coproc in an enormous amount of detail, which is in relation to bash and other shells. So I guess my final point is that I can write, for this application, I can write a simpler Perl script that connects the SQLite database, prepares a query with a substitution point, repeats the call with different values without, and I can do that without a coprocess. And I did it just to prove that I could. I'll probably use that, in fact. And I've included it as a resource. It's an unfinished, fairly rough program, but just to give you some idea. And loads of other programming solutions are available, obviously. Python or C, if you want. C++. There are many, many things. Rust, I don't know. It doesn't feel to me as if this is a task for Bash, pushing up against the limits, and Bash not really catering for it all that well. And I think the conclusion I drew from Clack's experiences with it was that it's a feature looking for a use. So his challenge was, see if you can find a use and let me know. And I thought I had. And it's sort of a use, but it's not ideal. If you disagree, then come back and tell me why, and that would be an interesting discussion. Preferably as a show, of course. There's a bunch of examples here for you to look at, should the mood take you. And that's otherwise everything. Okay, I hope that wasn't too tedious and you got something out of it. All right then, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.